A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's basically a taxonomy of apartment viewing theater. He's asking what gear separates the serious renter from the casual looker, how far beyond the basics you can reasonably go, and whether you should be packing night vision goggles for your next rental walkthrough, which is either the most practical question we've ever gotten or the most unhinged.
It's both. It is absolutely both. And I love it because this is one of those topics where the line between legitimate due diligence and performance art is thinner than most people realize. You show up with a laser measure and a moisture meter, you're a serious applicant. You show up with an EMF meter and a hazmat-style air quality monitor, suddenly you're the person the landlord tells stories about at dinner parties.
The ghost hunter who also wants a 12-month lease.
And yet, as we're going to see, even the absurd tools have their moments. I've been down this rabbit hole. I've talked to property managers. I've read far too many forum threads from people who bring industrial bore scopes to studio apartment viewings. There's a whole world here.
Let's start with the baseline. What's the minimum viable toolkit for someone who wants to be taken seriously?
The laser measure and the pin-type moisture meter. Specifically, something like the Bosch GLM50-27C, that's about $150, and the General Tools MMD4E, which runs about $40. These answer the two questions landlords hate most. One, does my couch actually fit in here? And two, is that wall hiding a water problem?
The laser measure over a tape measure, is that actually better? Or is it just shinier?
This is where it gets interesting. The Bosch unit I mentioned has an accuracy of plus or minus 1.5 millimeters at 50 meters. That's impressive. But here's the thing, most apartment rooms are under 8 meters. At that distance, a $20 tape measure is actually more accurate. The laser measure has a minimum range, beam divergence, and it can struggle with reflective surfaces or direct sunlight. A tape measure doesn't care about any of that.
The laser measure is objectively worse for measuring a bedroom, and yet, it's the thing serious renters bring.
Because it's not about the measurement. It never was. The laser measure is a prop. It signals that you are the kind of person who owns a laser measure. You're not just some random person off the street who saw a Craigslist ad. You're prepared. You've done this before. You're going to notice if things don't add up. The landlord sees that little red dot on the wall and thinks, this person is going to read the lease.
It's the rental equivalent of wearing a suit to a job interview even though the office is casual. You're not dressing for the job. You're dressing for the person who decides whether you get the job.
And the moisture meter serves the same function but with higher stakes. A pin-type meter works by measuring electrical resistance between two probes. Dry wood reads over 200 kilo-ohms. Saturated wood reads under 10. You stick the pins into a wall or a baseboard and you get a number. If that number is low, you've got moisture. If it's high, you're dry.
The landlord watches you jab little holes into their wall and thinks what, exactly?
They think you know something they don't, which is, of course, the whole point. But there's a real technical distinction here that most people miss. Pin-type meters require physical contact and leave tiny holes. Pinless meters use capacitance. They send an electromagnetic signal into the wall and measure how it bounces back. They're faster, they don't damage surfaces, but they can be fooled. Metal lath, foil-backed insulation, radiant heating pipes. All of those can give you a false positive. You'll get a screaming wet reading on a bone-dry wall because there's a metal mesh behind the plaster.
Which is how you end up accusing a landlord of hiding water damage when the wall is just old.
Now you've lost the apartment. Not because you were wrong about the moisture, but because you were wrong about the social dynamic. You pulled out a tool you didn't fully understand, made an accusation, and now the landlord thinks you're going to be a nightmare tenant who calls every week about imaginary problems.
The baseline kit is $190 of signaling equipment that also happens to do useful measurements. Where do you go from there?
The next tier is what I'd call the practical escalation. Tools that are genuinely useful, that provide data you can't get with your eyes, but that start pushing the boundaries of what's socially acceptable at a 15-minute viewing. And the first one on that list, the bridge between sensible and absurd, is the thermal camera.
I've seen those. They look like something a SWAT team uses to check if someone's hiding behind a door.
That's exactly the problem, or the appeal, depending on your perspective. The FLIR One Pro, about $300, clips onto your phone. It's got a resolution of 160 by 120 pixels. That's about 19,000 thermal pixels. And it can detect temperature differences as small as 0.07 degrees Celsius. The sensor is an uncooled microbolometer that picks up long-wave infrared in the 8 to 14 micron range. That wavelength goes right through drywall. It does not go through metal studs, which is an important limitation.
What are you actually looking for with one of these?
First, thermal bridging. That's where there's a gap in the insulation and the outside temperature bleeds through the wall. You'll see it as a cold stripe on an exterior wall in winter. That's not just a comfort issue, it's a mold risk, because condensation forms where warm indoor air hits a cold surface. Second, missing insulation entirely. If one wall is 5 degrees colder than the others, someone cheaped out during construction. Third, and this is the big one, active water leaks behind walls. Water has a high thermal mass. It holds temperature differently than drywall or wood. So a wet patch shows up as a cold spot even if the surface feels dry to the touch.
A moisture meter might miss that.
Might absolutely miss it. There was a case out of Portland. A renter was looking at a ground floor unit. Everything looked fine. Moisture meter read dry on the baseboards. But the thermal camera picked up a cold patch on the bathroom wall behind the vanity, just a few degrees colder than the surrounding area. The renter flagged it. The landlord reluctantly cut a small inspection hole, and they found active stachybotrys growth. The moisture meter didn't catch it because the moisture was deep in the wall cavity, not near the surface. The thermal camera saw the temperature anomaly caused by the evaporative cooling of the wet material.
Of course there are.
The renter walked away from that apartment, probably saved themselves months of health problems. So the thermal camera is not a toy. It's useful. But here's the social problem. When you pull out a thermal camera in a 400-square-foot studio, you look like you're investigating a crime scene. The landlord doesn't see a prepared renter. They see a liability.
There's a landlord forum somewhere with a thread titled, "Applicant brought a FLIR to the viewing. Should I be worried?"
I guarantee that thread exists. I've seen versions of it. Property managers talk about gear-heavy applicants the way TSA agents talk about people who show up 3 hours early for a domestic flight. It's not that they're wrong to be prepared. It's that the level of preparation signals something about how they're going to behave as tenants.
The overprepared applicant is going to call about every trip, every creak, every slightly loose doorknob.
Landlords hate that, even though, objectively, those are the tenants who take care of the property. It's a perverse incentive. The ideal tenant, from a landlord's perspective, pays on time and never calls. The ideal tenant, from a renter's perspective, has a landlord who fixes things immediately. Those two ideals are in direct conflict.
Let's talk about the other tools in the practical escalation tier. You mentioned an outlet tester.
The Klein Tools RT250 plugs into any standard outlet and tells you if the wiring is correct. It can detect 6 common faults: open ground, reverse polarity, open hot, open neutral, hot and ground reversed, and the dangerous one, hot on neutral with open ground. That last one is what electricians call a bootleg ground. It's when someone has connected the neutral wire to the ground terminal to fool a basic outlet tester. It's a fire and shock hazard, and it's surprisingly common in older buildings where someone did their own electrical work.
$20 to find out if your new apartment might electrocute you. That seems like a good deal.
It's the best deal in the entire toolkit. And unlike the thermal camera, an outlet tester doesn't raise eyebrows. It takes 10 seconds. You plug it in, 3 lights tell you what's happening, you move on. The landlord sees you being thorough but not obsessive. It's the perfect balance of utility and social acceptability.
What about noise? You can't test for noise during a quiet Sunday afternoon viewing.
The decibel meter. Something like the Reed R8050, about $60. You hold it near windows, near shared walls, near the ceiling if there's an upstairs neighbor. You're looking for the ambient baseline. In a truly quiet apartment, you're getting readings in the 25 to 30 decibel range. That's library quiet. If you're getting 45 decibels near a window during a Sunday viewing, that window isn't doing much soundproofing, and during rush hour on a Tuesday, it's going to be a problem.
I assume there's a social cost to this one, too. Standing in the corner of an empty apartment holding a device and frowning at the numbers.
It's a little weird, but it's defensible. You can say, look, I work from home. I need to know if this is going to be a problem. That's a reasonable thing to ask. The tool just gives you data to back up the concern. It's when you get to the next tier that the justifications start to get thin. The DepStack DS300. It's a flexible camera on a cable. You snake it into wall voids, behind appliances, into HVIC vents. It's the tool that says, I don't trust anything I can see. I need to see what's behind the things I can see.
The rectal exam of apartment viewing.
I was going to say the colonoscopy, but yes. And it's not useless. There was a case out of New York. A renter was looking at an apartment that had a weird intermittent smell. The landlord said it was old pipes. The renter snaked an endoscope into a floor vent and found a desiccated rat. The landlord had supposedly had the ducts cleaned the week before.
The landlord was either lying about the cleaning, or the cleaning company was lying about doing the work.
Either way, the renter had actionable information. But here's the thing. If you pull out an endoscope during a viewing, you have crossed a line. You are no longer a prospective tenant. You are an inspector. And the landlord is going to treat you accordingly. They might ask you to leave. They might refuse to rent to you. They might be justified in doing so, because at some point you're not evaluating the apartment, you're disassembling it.
Where is that line, exactly? If I bring 3 tools and use them in 15 minutes, I'm thorough. If I bring 5 and spend 45 minutes, I'm a problem. Is there a sweet spot?
The average apartment viewing in the U.S. lasts 12 to 15 minutes. If you bring more than 3 tools, you spend more time unpacking and setting up gear than you do actually looking at the apartment with your eyes. And your eyes are still your best tool. No amount of gear compensates for not looking up at the ceiling for water stains, or not opening the kitchen cabinets to check for mouse droppings.
The sweet spot is 3 tools, used efficiently, with your attention on the apartment, not on the gear.
And we'll get to what those 3 should be. But first, let's talk about the territory beyond the sweet spot. The tools that are technically functional, but socially catastrophic.
Night vision goggles.
The prompt asks about this directly, and I love it because it's the perfect example of a tool that sounds useful in theory and is completely absurd in practice. A PVS-14 night vision monocular runs $800 and up. The digital alternatives, like the Cyanex Aurora, are cheaper but still several hundred bucks. They amplify ambient light or use infrared illuminators to let you see in the dark.
The use case for apartment viewing is what, exactly? The landlord forgot to pay the electric bill?
That's actually the one plausible scenario, a unit where the power is off. It happens more than you'd think, especially with vacant units where the landlord has stopped paying utilities between tenants. There was a case in Chicago. A renter was looking at a basement unit. Power was off. The landlord said it was just a billing issue and would be resolved before move-in. The renter used a digital night vision scope to do a walkthrough anyway. Residual moisture staining on the walls that had been painted over. The unit had supposedly been professionally dried after a flood. The night vision revealed the paint was fresh in suspicious patterns. The renter walked away.
It's not useless.
It's not useless, but it's wildly disproportionate. You can achieve the same thing with a good flashlight. A Streamlight Stinger, $100, 10 times brighter than any phone light, and you don't look like you're about to conduct a nighttime raid on the apartment.
The night vision goggles aren't about seeing in the dark. They're about signaling a level of preparedness that borders on paranoia.
That's what makes them absurd. They're a prop that says, I have considered scenarios you have not considered. I am ready for the apartment viewing to go sideways in ways you cannot imagine. The landlord sees those and thinks, this person is going to be a problem. Not because they're wrong, but because they're operating at a level of vigilance that is incompatible with a normal landlord-tenant relationship.
Like adopting a feral cat.
I was going to say bringing a structural engineer to a studio apartment viewing, but yes.
Let's talk about that. The nuclear option. Bringing an actual professional.
This is where we leave the realm of tools and enter the realm of entourage. Bringing a structural engineer to a standard apartment viewing is the ultimate power move. It says, I don't just want to know if this apartment is good. I want to know if this building will still be standing in 30 years. It's warranted in specific cases. Pre-war buildings with visible foundation cracks, units with a history of water intrusion, anything where the structural integrity is in question. But for a standard viewing, it's pure theater.
There's a variant of this, the building biologist. Someone who tests for mold, electromagnetic fields, air quality, all of it. The full indoor environmental consultant.
At that point, you're not renting an apartment. You're commissioning an environmental impact assessment. The cost of the inspection exceeds the first month's rent. And the landlord is going to look at you and see someone who will never be satisfied, who will always find something wrong, who will treat the lease as an adversarial document rather than a mutual agreement.
Which brings us to the EMF meter. The Trifield TF2, $170, the Ghost Hunter Special.
This is my favorite one because it sits right at the intersection of legitimate utility and complete absurdity. EMF meters measure electromagnetic fields. In the 50 to 60 Hz range, which is the frequency of household electrical current, they can detect live wires behind walls. If you're getting a 12 milligauss reading near a bedroom wall, that could indicate old knob and tube wiring that's still live, or a splice that's not properly enclosed. That's a fire hazard. That's something you want to know about.
There was a case in San Francisco, wasn't there?
A renter found a 12 milligauss reading near a bedroom wall. It led to the discovery of a knob and tube wiring splice hidden behind plaster. The landlord hadn't disclosed it, probably didn't even know it was there. The renter flagged it, and the landlord had to remediate before the lease could be signed. That EMF meter potentially prevented an electrical fire.
The social cost.
The social cost is enormous. EMF meters are culturally associated with ghost hunting shows and people who think Wi-Fi is giving them headaches. When you pull one out at an apartment viewing, the landlord doesn't think, oh, this person is checking for faulty wiring. They think, this person is going to complain about the cell tower 3 blocks away. You've immediately positioned yourself as someone with non-standard beliefs about technology, and landlords do not want to deal with that.
Even though you're using it for a perfectly legitimate purpose.
The tool is not the problem. The cultural baggage is the problem. And that's true of a lot of the gear in the absurd tier. The gas leak detector, the UEI CD100A, about $100, is useful in units with gas stoves or heaters. But showing up with a sniffer makes you look like you're expecting an explosion. The full air quality monitor, something like the Yoohoo, $300, measures VOCs, PM2.5, carbon dioxide, temperature, humidity. That's the point where you've crossed from prepared renter to indoor environmental consultant. Do you really want to be the person whipping out a tablet showing real-time VOC spikes during a 15-minute viewing?
I'm imagining the landlord's face as you point at a graph and say, the off-gassing from your cheap paint is peaking at concerning levels.
You will not get that apartment. I can say that with confidence. You might be right about the paint. You might be protecting your health, but you will not get the apartment.
Where does this leave us? We've established that the baseline tools are partly functional and partly performative. The practical escalation tools are useful but carry social risk. The absurd tools are technically functional but socially catastrophic. What's the actual recommendation?
The power trio. Laser measure, outlet tester, thermal camera. Total cost about $470. The laser measure covers space verification and signals that you're a serious applicant. The outlet tester covers electrical safety. It's fast, it's cheap, it doesn't raise eyebrows. The thermal camera covers hidden moisture and insulation issues that your eyes and a moisture meter can miss. Those three tools, used efficiently in a 15-minute viewing, give you more actionable data than any other combination.
You can carry them in a small bag without looking like you're about to set up a field laboratory.
The presentation matters. Which brings me to what I think is the single most effective prop in the entire apartment viewing toolkit, and it's not a tool at all. The printed checklist. Landlords consistently report that applicants who arrive with a clipboard and a checklist are perceived as organized and serious, not difficult. The checklist signals process, not paranoia. It says, I have a system, I know what I'm looking for, I'm not going to waste your time. It's the opposite of the EMF meter. The EMF meter says, I have concerns you don't understand. The checklist says, I have standards you can predict.
The checklist is the glockenspiel of corporate approachability.
I don't know what that means, but I think I agree with it. The point is, the social dynamics of the viewing are more important than the technical data collection. You can have the best tools in the world, but if you use them in a way that makes the landlord defensive, you've lost. The goal is to gather information without triggering the landlord's threat response.
If you're going to bring anything beyond the power trio, you need a narrative. You can't just say, I'm being thorough. That sounds like you're looking for problems. You need to say, I'm checking for this specific thing because I had a bad experience with it in my last apartment. That's socially legible. That makes you seem like someone who learned a lesson, not someone who's looking for a fight.
The narrative is everything. I'm checking the outlets because my last place had a bootleg ground and my computer got fried. I'm checking for cold spots on the walls because my last place had a mold problem and I was sick for 6 months. Those stories make you relatable. They make the landlord want to help you. They transform you from an adversary into a collaborator.
The gear is secondary to the performance. The performance is everything.
The performance has a simple goal. Signal that you are a low-risk, high-responsibility tenant. Someone who will pay on time, take care of the property, and not call about imaginary problems. The tools are props in that performance. They gather data, yes, but their primary function is to communicate that you are the kind of person who owns tools and knows how to use them.
Let's talk about the future of this. As the rental market gets tighter and more competitive, do we see a gear arms race? Are we going to have renters bringing drones for exterior inspections?
I think we're closer to that than people realize. There are already smartphone apps that use computer vision to detect cracks, water stains, and pest droppings. Give it 5 years, and AI-powered inspection tools will make the current Pro Kit look quaint. Your phone will be able to spot a water stain that's been painted over by analyzing subtle texture differences in the paint. It'll be able to identify mouse droppings in a dark corner of a cabinet from a single photo. The gear will be democratized, and the social dynamics will shift again.
The thermal camera becomes an app. The moisture meter becomes an AI model trained on thousands of known water damage patterns.
Then the landlords will adapt. They'll start expecting the AI inspection. The applicant who doesn't run the app will seem negligent. The baseline will move.
The fundamental thing doesn't change. The best tool is still your own attention. No amount of gear compensates for not looking up at the ceiling, for not opening the cabinets, for not running the shower to check the water pressure, for not standing in the bedroom at the time of day you'd actually be sleeping to see if the street noise is tolerable.
The tools are a supplement to attention, not a replacement for it, and I think that's the meta takeaway here. The people who show up with $5,000 of inspection gear are often the same people who forget to check if the windows open. They're so focused on the data that they miss the apartment.
The forest for the trees, or the mold for the spores.
Something like that. The point is, be thorough but be present. Bring the power trio. Bring a checklist. Have a narrative ready for anything beyond the basics. And remember that the goal is not to find a perfect apartment, that doesn't exist, but to find an apartment where the problems are ones you can live with.
To communicate to the landlord that you are someone they want to live with, which is, in the end, the whole game.
It really is.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1720s, Jesuit missionaries in the Gobi Desert encountered speakers of a previously undocumented dialect of Southern Yukagir, a language with such extreme polysynthetic morphology that a single verb could encode subject, object, tense, mood, and the cardinal direction of the action. The last known speaker of that dialect died in 1783, and the entire language subgroup is now considered extinct, surviving only in 3 pages of phonetic transcription found in a monastery archive in 1991.
A verb could tell you someone ran northeast while being sad about it.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Our producer is Hilbert Flemingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps other people find the show. We'll be back next time with another prompt from the void. I'm Corn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. Go look at some ceilings.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.